Welcome to the Flyover Ministry Podcast, a practical youth ministry podcast for small church leaders by small church leaders. We are grateful that you have joined us for our journey through ministry-related topics that we hope help equip and encourage you as you serve Jesus wherever you are.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is, once again, Flyover Ministry. If you didn't know, well, now you know. We're coming to the end here and surprisingly breaking tradition here, but I think it's worth pointing out this is just really good, interconnected, and we'd be amiss to not talk about fellowship here, but breaking tradition with talking with youth workers. We will get back to that at some point in the future here. But really wanted to take an opportunity to celebrate and to look at how God works in the midst of our fellowship with other believers. And I'm going to borrow a line that Andy Coyle used during his Fly elective. Jordan, I don't know if you listened to that yet or not.
Not to his elective, but I went to his session as at Fly, so.
Yeah, the desire of, if you want to grow as a musician, what do you need? You need to be... you need to have somebody part of a band, right? You can't just watch YouTube videos. You can't just try and guess or play along with whatever's on the radio. You need to be in a band. You need to have an instructor. You need to have the guidelines to be able to know what to play and how to play it. And you need to know how to tune your instrument. And all of that comes with, again, being a part of the larger group of musicians. Now, translating that into the world of the church, you can watch church online, and there are people, especially now as we're coming through flu season, where to try and keep other people from being sick, that they are watching online. We have people that are shut-ins that watch online, and you know, hats off to those people for making that effort to still be connected with us in that way. But you still need to be a part of the fellowship with other believers. You still need to have that connection, because that community is what we were designed for. Something that Jason Holt pointed out early in the pandemic years, a few years ago, was that as the rise of Zoom came, we had that connection even more pronounced. Like, we had all sorts of ways to be able to connect with one another, but we did not have community. There is a difference between that connection and community that screens do not allow us to have. And I think maybe that's the desire for like Meta or like AI, is that it would become more of a place for community. Maybe that is sure. What they're striving after, but that's just speculation on my point. But Jordan, I am curious here, when you think about fellowship, what immediately comes to mind?
Ideally, when I think about fellowship, what I think are a couple of things. One, I think of the relationship between David and Jonathan, and where you have that friendship where there was someone who's closer than a brother. And ultimately, it's pointing to Christ as the one who sticks closer to a brother. But I think with David and Jonathan, we see that intimacy together, where there's that love for one another and that sharing of life, right? And I think that's a desire of our hearts and a need of ours, is to experience that within the whole body of Christ. And that's not going to be everybody. I recognize that. But there is something supposed to be unique about the relationship within members of the church together. Jesus points to that in John 17, where he talks about, by your love for one another is how the world will know that God has sent me. That's a form of evangelism in itself, is successful and true fellowship. And I know we've talked about this before in episodes past, where fellowship is more than just sitting together and talking about the weather. It could include that. There's times for that casual conversation, but fellowship is something that is going to be reaching deeper depths, where we have opportunity to, as we see in James, confess our sins to one another, to truly pray for one another, to share the struggles that are going on in our lives, the difficulties of day-to-day life, the disappointments that we have, the frustrations that we have. That happens in a place of true fellowship. And I know community has been kind of a buzzword for a while, but there's a reason for it, because I think those go hand in hand. you don't have true fellowship without a true community, in a sense. And how valuable is community if you don't have that fellowship necessarily? And we see this even mimicked, in a sense, by the world, right? So you think about what it feels like to don all the attire and the costume of a sports fan, and then to be at the arena or stadium and caught up in the moment. And you have like those fellow people who like the same team, and you rejoice together at the touchdown or whatever in the big play. And there's a unifying aspect to that. But that doesn't touch the depths of what we have in Christ. And I think when I think of fellowship, that's where my mind goes. Mm.
Yeah, I do think about how fellowship is something that we desire very strongly and very much. It is also something where, when you talk about Christian community, just seeing how different that is and how much more difficult that is going from like a place like our Bible college or a Christian college like I went to, and then entering into the life of the congregation, mm-hmm. like that is a world of difference where you are in a dorm with people looking at you as one who is not my floor head. You were, I think you were the third floor in the guy's dorm yep. at the Bible college. Yeah. And I was on second. So yeah, you were floor adjacent, but recognizing that kind of community where you're naturally just doing things together, whether that's homework or going out to eat or ultimate frisbee or whatever that might be, you have that. And all of a sudden you enter into the life of the church as a whole, and now you have to work at it, and you really have to try and prioritize it. And it's just, it is a lot of work, and it can be a lot of strain, which I think, this is going to sound pretty cliche, but when you're talking about the most bang for your buck when it comes to developing community, you got to go with the meals together. I think there's a reason why the early church shared meals together as often as they did. It was a point to be able to strengthen one another, to have that kind of connection. And I think even when we have meals, we got a lot of people that stand in line together, a lot of people that sit with one another. Like, these are my friends. These are the people I want to sit with. And an idea that I had was that, maybe we just challenge our people to sit with different people, not just the people that they're comfortable with, but people that maybe you don't know. Maybe you have an opportunity to sit with a family. And I recognize that that's kind of a challenge. Some of our families are fairly large. I mean, your family, Jordan, is large enough. You probably take up a whole table.
It's true. But our kids are old enough that they're starting to like peel off of our table. So we do have room.
Ah, good. So you can, I mean, you don't want to excommunicate a child from their family in order for the sake of fellowship. But you could sit table adjacent and try and talk with them if the opportunity arises, to be able to just kind of lean over and say, hey, how's it going? And just interact with the kids. And I mean, I think when you're having those meals, there's even times, even during the worship service, when the kids are like looking behind the pews or something like that, and they lock eyes with you, you still have an opportunity to wave and whatnot. But fellowship, not just with the people that we are comfortable being with, not just with friends, but trying to get to know all the congregation. And I think that is a strength that's unique to smaller churches, is that we kind of have to, but it is mm-hmm. kind of easy to do because there's not many of us to begin with. So kind of a unique opportunity that we have for smaller churches to even have a more naturally strong fellowship with one another mm-hmm. beyond just being related to half the rest of the church.
Yeah. And, you know, other ideas too, as you're thinking about growing in fellowship and modeling fellowship well, during the church service. Now, this is maybe more to leaders who've got children, but you know, our kids need to learn somehow, and maybe it's bringing people with. Maybe it's bringing a student with as you greet an elderly person or one of your own kids. And I'd also really recommend exploring what it looks like to engage in this strategic outreach outside of just a Sunday morning context. You know, like, how can you invite somebody into your life? We've really enjoyed having people over for supper, and like, I know that doesn't work for everybody, 'cause scheduling can be crazy, but it lets our kids get to know these adults in the congregation in a fairly easy context for them. And it lets people in the congregation know about our whole lives, because if you come over, the kids are going to give you a tour of every place in the house, and they're so excited they'll tell you everything. But that, I mean, there's some health in that too, to be able to just connect in a deeper level. And that gets you outside of the time pressure of Sunday morning. I mean, I feel guilty sometimes because Sunday mornings are just kind of busy. You know, there's stuff to do tech-wise between the service and Sunday school. I'm a Sunday school teacher, so sometimes there's last-minute prep for that. Before the service, you know, if there's communion, I'm lining up kids to help collect the communion cups. There's just different things. And I could be maybe more intentional about trying to be ahead of the game on some of those things. But I know for me, that can be a tough time to really sit down and have an uninterrupted relational conversation with someone. So you take them over to supper for your place, or to your place for supper, that can remove some of those obstacles, and that can be a really good opportunity to grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think especially as leaders in that regard, is that because we're trying to organize and facilitate and lead that kind of a time of worship and fellowship for others, like we're the ones that are kind of on the front lines making sure all of this is happening. So there's a lot of moving parts, and to have somebody just kind of casually interject and say, like, with nothing really better to do and nothing like, well, there's Sunday school, but I don't really go to Sunday school. I just want to have some time to talk with you. It's like, I don't have that time. Right. Yeah. So that's a good point to make here. How have you seen fellowship really kind of taking off beyond just meals at your church, Jordan?
You know, that's a challenge. I think that can kind of even depend on who you ask in our congregation. To some new people, our congregation seems extremely warm. Some people may have a different perspective of it, and you want to be like mindful of that. You can't control someone's perception, but I say that to say that we're still kind of trying to figure some things out. But this past year, one thing that I've been most encouraged by is, and I know you might have said outside of the meal thing, but that's kind of where I'm going.
Go ahead.
We had decided to make a goal of everybody in our congregation getting visited either by pastor or the elders. You know, for people, for churches that have their visitation stuff together, like, this seems like, really? That's just what you started? Yes, it is. But it's a start to actually measure that and be intentional about it. And, you know, we had to clarify, like, what counts as a visit? Is sending a postcard to someone counting as a visitation of some sort? And so there's some clarification with that. But I know that there's some that embarked in the whole having people over for meals thing. And even if that's happening from a leadership perspective, I knew I was a recipient of one where it was an elder who was just like, invited our family over. And I was like, oh, this is probably our thing. So the next meeting is like, hey, you had our name, didn't you? Because we like assigned names to make sure we had that. He's like, oh, we've had your, I was like, no, you guys haven't. It's like, oh, well, we had a good time. We'll do that, you know? But even if that's just being modeled in leadership, I think that can help break down the walls of the congregation as a whole, and maybe inspire people in the congregation to do that even among themselves. So I really see this as a really good maybe beginning place to head out to that, and to start on this path of incorporating the whole congregation into a more relational setting. So the meals together is really strong. But then it also can like break down the generations, which is really important too, to like bring the cohesiveness together. And it's really important for the health of a congregation just to get beyond those things, you know, like also because I think we talked about this earlier, just how that reflects the reality of the gospel in the lives of believers and reflects the reality of Jesus coming. Like we think again of his high priestly prayer for us in John 17. So really important things to be thinking about this here too. But as we think about like the comfort levels that we have, that brings up a new point too to think through. Like, let's say that you've got a group that's really good at experiencing deep fellowship and communion together. Well, that's great if it's happening, but you get new people that come. So how do we invite people into this reality without it just being awkward, since they've missed out on the context that sometimes is required for those groups to really bond together?
Right. I've tried to make our group mindful of it. Like, imagine being a really close-knit group of friends, and then you invite your friends to be a part of it, and breaking into that kind of a strong circle of fellowship is incredibly difficult, even with the best intentions. I think you have to be, when you're mindful of it, you have eyes to see it a little bit better, to see it like, hey, someone's over there sitting by themselves. They're kind of being standoffish. I know when we see people sitting alone in our sanctuary, that there are people in our church who identify them and will go and sit with that individual, make sure they are welcomed. You know, when they come into the door, even for the first time, having people greet them, I think just assigning people as ushers to hand out bulletins and make sure that everyone is welcomed verbally. And if you don't know their names, ask it. You know, don't be embarrassed. I think if I could give up like half of the pointless facts I know to be even 10% more efficient at remembering people's names, I would do it like that. Like I just would. But to be not ashamed to ask, you know, I know I've seen you before and I really struggle with names. Can you help me out here? Cause I really would like to remember. I'm really trying here. Mm-hmm. And I think at least for our experience and my personal experience has been people just like, they'll laugh it off like, oh yeah, I struggle with names too. And then you get to have that awkward reintroduction again. Yep. But to see that there are people that can be welcomed in. I think youth group is really beneficial because we have the opportunity to do group games where those kind of barriers are broken down. Events like the Fly Convention are really helpful because that gets everybody out of their comfort zone and gives them a common bonding experience where they have they're able to make that kind of connection. Did you ever do any overnight activities when you were in high school? I promise there's a point to this question.
Like as a youth group?
No, just like for like an extracurricular activity for school.
Closest I could think of was when we had after the post-graduation party. We were at the bowling alley in the movie theater in town for like that night.
Sure. So I was in an activity called Student Congress. It was about as exciting as it sounds on face value there. What we would do, we'd go to a hotel, spend the night, and we would do that activity. We would try and pass, make believe bills, but it was an exercise in Robert's Rules. It was a little bit of debate, a little bit of public speaking. But there's an opportunity here where you're at an event like that. And I realize maybe not Student Congress, but maybe you're at like an overnight volleyball tournament. And there's people on that are there from your school that you've never really spoken to, but really you're like the only couple people that you know. And all of a sudden, like you have that common bonding experience where I don't really know anybody else, but I do know you, at least recognizing you. So I'm going to spend a lot of time there with you. And then you come back and everything's back to normal because they're back with their friends. All of this coming to the point here at church where I think we need to find opportunities to get our people to serve together, to have that common binding experience where maybe they are a little bit uncomfortable, but we're able to give them the tools that they need to be able to say, you're a part of this, same as me, and let's try growing together and get to know one another. There was a point where with Youth Worker Weekends being behind us, someone was talking about painting. Someone was talking about serving in on a short-term missions trip, and they wound up having to go and paint, and they were assigned to go painting with a couple of other adults. And as they were doing that, they realized, like, oh, this person is actually kind of cool, and we're talking and just having some fellowship, and you know, painting is work, but we're able to do this together. So, and I've shared this before too, but the highlight of our students, when they were even doing dishes with one another, they really appreciated that time because they were able to laugh and joke around while they did that work. And, you know, when you talk about fellowship, it doesn't matter what you're doing or where you go, so long as you're doing it together. And if that is the focus, that is I think really helpful in aligning your priorities as the people of God.
Sure. Another question, I mean, yes, for the shared experience as being something to cultivate and invite people into that more intimate circle, can really get the ball rolling there. And I think that's a huge thing too, when you're thinking about like, how does somebody enter into that, is, well, we need to be intentional about creating opportunities so that they don't feel left out. And yes, they're maybe missing some of the inside jokes at first, but we want to make sure that we are including them too. And that's part of the youth group culture too, right? Like every year we face, how do we let these incoming students know that they are a part of this group? Are there inside things that we want to bring them in on? And, you know, for us, it was, I mean, we haven't anything official. For a while, we would kind of greet each other with like saying punch bowl. And it was, I don't even know how it started. And then we'd like say goodbye by saying bowl punch. But it was just kind of like a thing that was unique and silly.
That's so weird.
It was ours. And then, you know, so when somebody else came in, I was like, hey, this is, you know, something we do here. And like, you were invited into that too, right? It's a small, tiny thing, but it's expressing an invitation to participate. Mm. And I think then too, that points to just the bigger reality for us too. At first, do we incorporate them into the group? And you have to build a level of trust. I think that's one thing that we sometimes don't consider when we're talking about fellowship, is that the trust that's required there for fellowship to be really deep. Because we've talked a lot about just spending time together, which is, I mean, yes, it is quantity, but there's also the aspect of quantity that comes to fellowship too. And if fellowship's not getting to a point where you're able to like really bear one another's burdens, or let your burdens be borne by somebody else, I would raise the point that maybe it's not that deep a fellowship that you have to begin with, right? And this is like the picture of what we see the congregation doing in the scriptures, is this is what we're called to as believers. And so that's another interesting point here too. Like, how do we go deep with one another so it's beyond there? And I don't know, like a lot of the times a conversation, if you're talking about the football game, you don't want to do what's, you know, affectionately known as that Jesus juke, to all of a sudden be like, oh, all right, here we go. Yeah, there was that play. Well, the real touchdown was Jesus on the cross. Speaking of, how are you doing with Jesus this week? Or, you know, they just didn't seem committed to that run play. Kind of like being devoted to something, like your devotions, right? So don't do that cringe stuff. But sometimes, you know, building that relationship that's cornerstone is Christ, we do dive into that. Like, you know, I'm just wondering, man, how are you doing really? Like, how are things with Jesus going? I don't know how long it's been since I've been asked that at church. And maybe I'm like speaking of this because of that. And maybe the assumption is like, I'm an employee, so I must have things figured out. But I don't know how often those conversations are happening collectively. And I think that's a missing thing that we so need in our churches, to really like get to that level of where we're communicating on a soul level, just like loving one another. Like I pointed to beginning at the this time together, talking about the David and Jonathan relationships. They didn't withhold, you know, all this stuff. They let them each other know when they're going through a really difficult time, right? And we should be able to have that as well. And that's not just for us spiritually, that's just for us in life. You know, we need that. I don't want to dip too far into that, but I wonder how much of our current culture's experience with mental health challenges kind of can connect to that, right? Or sure. We just are so isolated that we don't take the time to be known and to know others.
And I think it's an opportunity for us as leaders in the church as well to even break the ice on that, to say, we have elders that we could turn to at our meetings for a church council, as we're talking about the needs of the church, to come and express like, this is a concern of mine, and I've just been really struggling with this, and I'd appreciate advice. I'd appreciate some prayer on this, and help me to even just be verbally crying out to your fellow leaders to say, please help me in this, because I'm struggling, and I'm just exhausted of dealing with this by myself. And being that vulnerable, I think, allows others to be a little more comfortable with being vulnerable. You did mention here, too, something that I'm kind of curious on your take on this. But do you suppose the hesitancy that we have to not ask one another how we're doing and to go deep faster is because they're kind of older churches and people already know themselves pretty well? Yeah. I'm saying this because we come from a smaller church fellowship that has... our churches are old, and a lot of our members are related to one another. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about family in a small church, well, I already know a lot of what's going on. So there's a lot of people that don't ask. And I'm curious if that is just unique to me or if there's more going on from your perspective.
I'm going to do a hot take here, and I'm going to say that I think it's back to sin.
Mm.
I mean, and the reason I say that is if you look to the story of Adam and Eve in the garden, the very first thing that they do isn't hide from God. They hide from each other. You know, they put leaves over themselves because they recognized that they were naked, and so they hid. And then they did hide from God as well. But that picture in my mind is that ever since that time, we have been hesitant to really expose ourselves to another. And I mean, I even think of just like with my wife, right? If I should be able to be totally open and honest with anybody, it should be her who's committed to love me for the rest of our lives together, right? But I still hesitate. I still fearful about certain things. Like, what is she going to think about me? Is this going to be going to make her mad? Whatever the case is, right? And so I think ultimately underneath all that, yes, you could have the familiarity, but even within families, do we just assume we know like how this event impacted somebody because they're family? Or have we actually taken the time to say, you know, I know that this happened. Like, how did that make you feel? Like, how is this impacting you? And even just the day-to-day stuff, like, you know, again, going back to the walk with Jesus, that's not something that you can necessarily see from current events and just say, oh, they're my brother, so I know how they're doing with Jesus. Not unless you ask and talk about it, right? So I think for me, it would go back to just ever since we've had sin in the world, we've had a predisposition to hide from one another.
Hmm. That's really good, Jordan. Let me ask you this follow-up question. What do you do when you're trying to have fellowship with someone else in the church and you just know that there's enough differences where I would not naturally be friends with this person? Like if it were any other situation outside of worship or being together and doing things as a church, I would not be with this person at all. Like we just don't see eye to eye on pretty much anything. Like the only thing we really have in common is our faith in Jesus Christ. What happens when you are trying to have fellowship with someone that you probably aren't friends with?
Sure. Not the authority on this topic here, but I would go as far as just say, like, what do we believe about the gospel, right? Do we believe when it says there's no longer like slave or free, Greek or Jew? Do we believe that Jesus is the biggest thing in our lives that would unite us? And if so, then would be worth the effort to know this brother. And it might be awkward and you might not have a whole lot in common, but I think even just going in and say, you know what, I know we have like totally different hobbies and we might not enjoy like hanging out, but we both need to eat. So let's just grab lunch someplace and I will do whatever you want to eat. If it's just like a totally vegan tofu place, I will do that just to have this time with you. And because I want to say that I love you and I want to show that I love you. And that might be the only time this year, but I want you to know that I see you, that you are a part of this family and I value you, right? Now that's being said, and do I live that out? I can't say that I'm really great at that. So there you go, just in a perfect world.
I'm trying to calculate how far I would have to drive to get to a vegan tofu place.
Well, I mean, that just going to be more of the example of we need to, at that point, be like the adult who's going to be willing to concede. Because if we're that different and we're going to try to find something that we will both equally like, and that just might be a hurdle that's really big. So instead of trying to do that, let's just serve them. I mean, like that's a picture of scripture, right? Serving our brother and loving our neighbor. Let's do something that we know they would like and meet them on their ground just to say hi. And, you know, I think that effort that can be repeated over time would speak volumes in a situation like that.
Yeah. I do think that sometimes our view of loving our neighbor is by just allowing them to exist over there and I will exist over here.
Right.
And we can tolerate one another through the distance. And, you know, I wonder what that will look like with that attitude. That attitude doesn't translate into heaven. Like, you're not going to have that person over there on that side of heaven, and I will be over here, and we will just coexist from a distance. the reality here that I think we're challenged to remind ourselves with is that you are mutual citizens of heaven, of a greater kingdom, and that you are called to, like you said, love your neighbor as yourself. And that includes the people that maybe you don't see eye to eye with. But, you know, reminding ourselves of what Scripture says, as much as it is possible on you, live at peace with all men. Hebrews 10:25, again, also talks about, you know, not giving up meeting with one another, and even more so as the day of Christ's return approaches. And I think there is a real challenge that I think I will end my point on for this episode here is, do you have something that people feel comfortable inviting their friends to in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone is going to be really comfortable coming to a worship service in the morning, but you can create something that, you know, you might feel more comfortable inviting friends to that isn't so formal and outright. I think we like board games, like you mentioned too, like have people over for game night. That is really enjoyable, at least for us. There are things that you can do to create that make it comfortable for people to invite their friends to. And the reminder is, you know, God's kingdom is not built by yourself. It is built with the fellowship with other believers. So as you pursue that, don't just do that by yourself. Be an example, but also talk with your people about what else can we do to strengthen our fellowship together.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'll wrap up with just kind of highlighting what you had said about your church members being citizens of heaven. I remember the quote. I don't remember who said it or where I heard it, but it stuck with me. And the person who said it said that, you know, the reality is that your friends are friends for a season. Like, they're in your life for a bit. You know, us outside of high school, we recognize how those high school relationships that we like valued everything on necessarily weren't things that lasted all the time. But then we look and you say your family. Well, your family are, you're connected to them for life. Like, you have no choice, but your brother's always going to be your brother, right? And that's true. But what's unique about the church is, like, they're going to be the people that you're with for eternity, you know, the true church. And like, that's a huge thing. So how do we reflect that in how we live? So our encouragement for you guys is, as you go, try to figure this wonderful animal of fellowship out in your own context, that you put in the effort to reach out to the whole church, to break some of those boundaries that have existed relationally, and maybe get that ball rolling on truly loving one another and being able to be loved by others too. It takes honesty and it takes vulnerability, and that's a challenge. But just because it's hard doesn't mean that it's not good. So with that, may you go in peace and serve the Lord.
Thanks for listening to Flyover Ministry. You can find, follow, and give feedback on our Instagram and Facebook pages at Flyover Ministry. You can also get in contact with us on our Gmail account, flyoverministrypodcast@gmail.com. You can find other episodes that we've recorded on iTunes and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and please feel free to share them with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.